The woman kidnapped into sexual bondage is a staple of pornographic writing, and all too often, of real-life abuse. But in Rupert Thompson's latest novel, The Book of Revelation, the victim is a man. Here's Rupert Thompson.
He had no memory of hearing the door open, and yet it must have done, for there they were, the women, moving towards him, the hems of their black cloaks snagging on splinters in the floorboards. They stood above him, peering down, as though he lay far below them, as though he was lying at the bottom of a well. "You're ours now." He couldn't tell which one of them had spoken. His gaze lifted beyond them to the skylight, that square of blue, empty and indifferent. The same woman spoke again. She was the tallest of the three. She had a slight accent, as if she'd learned her English in America. "You belong to us," she said. "You're ours."
Powerlessness and terror are emotions that have become all too familiar to us. So maybe we're a little better prepared to identify with the unfortunate hero of the Book of Revelation. Rupert Thompson told Steve Paulson how his character gets into his bizarre predicament.
The narrator of the Book of Revelation is an English dancer living and working in Amsterdam. He's also a man of extraordinary physical beauty. And the book really starts with him at the height of his career, where his life is going very well. And it's at this point that he's abducted by three strangers, three women, and held in a room, a white room, for 18 days. That's essentially the first half of the book. The second half of the book follows the next 5 years after his release from the room. And it's a kind of bizarre quest, I suppose, on his part for something at that point. And it's his attempt to reconcile himself to what's happened to him and come to terms with it.
This man, this dancer, is held captive for 18 days, and he's chained to the floor, and these women do various things to him, I guess you could say. And it's very charged, and there are some explicit sexual scenes in the story. And you know, when you describe the story, it almost can come across sounding pornographic, but clearly you're using sex to get at some larger issues here.
First of all, as you say, the book is in a way told through sex scenes, and that was a huge challenge, a technical challenge in a way, and something I'd never really done before. But that was simply a way of telling the story. What I was really interested in was putting a man in this position. I mean, we're far more used to hearing about women being in this position, women being abducted, women being used in or abused in this way. We don't hear very much about men in this predicament, and I was interested to look at what a man would do if he was denied all power, all control, if he was rendered passive.
Is this a story about rape?
I really didn't know where the book was going, you see, because with most books, I have the idea in my head for quite some time before I start work on it, and I leave it there, you know, in the back of my head, and it grows and changes and matures, and so that by the time I start work on it, there's something there that's sort of matured organically almost. And with this book, none of that happened. And in fact, there didn't seem to be a germination process at all, none that I was aware of. The book was just suddenly there, one gloomy morning in London, you know. And this book, more than any other I've done, I think, was a very fast drive into the unknown. It was like, you know, being on the highway with your headlights turned out. And I didn't know where it was going to go at all. And the curious thing about the book is that it's so sort of black and white. Like in the first half of the book, when he's in the room, he's passive and without power. And he tells that part of the story in this third person because he can't bear to tell it in the first person. He kind of wants to pretend it's happening to someone else. In the second half of the book, though, everything is reversed. You know, he then, from being passive, becomes active and sort of supremely active
rather sexually active.
He does, and he goes into the first person, you know, because he's going from being also an object, which he's been in the room, to being a subject suddenly. He's having an effect on all kinds of people. And in effect, what's happened is, and I think he says it somewhere in the book, he says that he feels as if these three women, rather like vampires, have turned him into them, you know, so that he's, in some sense, in the second half of the book, behaving exactly the same way as they are. And yet he's become this thing in the second half of the book where he disapproves of what he is, and yet he can't do anything about it. You know, his tragedy is that he's locked in this predicament that he can't change. His biology almost can betray him. You know, his body can do something that he doesn't want it to do. So it's as if there are two of you in the room, you know, and the one is trying to control the other, or one is betraying the other.
He also goes through different stages during his period of being held captive. He's furious at first, and he doesn't want to play their game, but he realizes he doesn't have any power to say no. I mean, they can hurt him. And then he starts to identify with them.
Well, you see, this is another thing that was really important to me in the writing of it, because there have been certain accusations of misogyny, I mean, here and there, leveled at the book, you know, and I knew that would happen. And to me, it's quite wrong-headed to use that word, because a misogynist being, you know, someone who hates all women. Now, this is a man, you know, this is a man who's been captured by women, held in a room and had all, you know, kinds of things done to him, as you said. In a way, he's got every excuse to hate women from that point onwards, you know, and yet he doesn't. What he does is he tries to humanize them, because we haven't really mentioned, but, you know, these women are faceless throughout. Their faces are always covered by hoods. It's only their naked bodies that he sees. So, you know, they're nightmarish figures, and he knows nothing about them. So, curiously, rather than just choosing to hate them and dismiss them, he tries to humanize them. He uses the sound of their voices and, like, certain, like, little differences that emerge, differences between the women, to build up separate characters. And in a sense, he builds up archetypes. You know, they're almost stereotypes, stereotypical women that he's describing to you. But he's doing the best he can, you know, to sort of separate them out. So, I mean, that was just really important to me to do that, because I thought that he's that kind of man. He's a man who, prior to being captured, was a man who loved women, who, as he says in the book, they're actually his raw material. You know, he not only dances, but he choreographs. So he's using the bodies of women to make art, you know. So that would be his reaction, I think, to try and understand, try and humanize, try and, you know, he's not a man who would jump to demonizing.
This man, this dancer, is released after 18 days, and his world falls apart at that point. His girlfriend leaves him. For one thing, he has a terrible time telling anyone about this. I mean, he's humiliated, he's embarrassed, and he feels guilty about it, which I suppose is the reaction that a lot of women talk about after they've been raped as well.
It's interesting, because I had lunch with someone, and he was saying that if he'd been the dancer, he would have gone to the police right away, as soon as he was released. And I thought, I guess that is a possibility. It just didn't seem to be a possibility for this character. And I suppose when I imagined that happening, what I imagined was a man going into a police station, which would be mostly male, and saying, I've just been raped by three women. And the kind of looks on their faces, you know, you can just imagine it. And curiously, this was borne out for me when I did the research in Amsterdam, because I had to go there to research Dutch police procedure, basically, just for the end of the book. I found a very charming man in the section of the police that deals with crimes against women and children. You know, I interviewed him for an hour and found out the rather dull things that I needed to find out. And then at the end, he sort of leaned back and said, so what's this book about that you're writing? You know, and I gave it to him in two or three sentences. It's about a man who's abducted by three women and held in a room. And he leaned back, and this broad grin appeared on his face, and he said, that's terrible. And so I used it in the book. It was so odd because, you know, for an hour he'd been a policeman working in a division that dealt with crimes against women. But as soon as it turned around and he was asking me a question, he was suddenly a man. And this was such a typical male reaction that I couldn't resist using it in the book itself. And that, I imagine, is what the police would do if you walked in. But, you know, in the end, the book is much more about... There's a sense in which the whole book is a preface to recovery. So something terrible happens to someone. He then goes through, he tries to reconcile himself, and then it's almost like when you reach the last page of the book, he can now begin to live again, you know, possibly. So the book is dealing with this unusual and uncomfortable gap between something bad happening and being able to carry on with your life.
Rupert Thompson has written six novels, including The Book of Revelation. He talked to Steve Paulson.